Welcome to the Sound Decisions Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Nosheny. On each episode of Sound Decisions, we focus on one songwriter and one of their songs. We explore the themes behind the lyrics of the song, as well as the decisions that the songwriter has made in the melodic and harmonic structure. The goal is to bring you, the listener, into the creative process and give you a close-up look at what it takes to create the songs we love. Today I spoke with Dutch Huff. Together with his brother TJ, they make up the band The Facebreaker. Their eponymous first album was released in 2012 and features eclectic instrumentations and arrangements, styles ranging from metal to electronica to world music to surf, and guest performances by many of their musician friends. The album has a cinematic approach, with vivid imagery in both the lyrics and the music. In their own words, this first album is drawn from the high and lonesome sounds of folks eating dinner, organizing their garages, harvesting wheat, celebrating birthdays, and swimming. The album also features a set of variations on a theme titled It Just Do, It Just Don't, placed every other track. We sat down to discuss these variations. Hi, Dutch.
Hey. How's it going, Dan?
Good. Dutch, it's great to have you here. You are one half of The Facebreaker.
That's right.
And we're going to talk today about actually your whole album that you released. What's the title of the album?
Self-titled.
It's just self-titled. It's The Facebreaker.
Yep.
We're going to be talking about a lot of the different parts of the album. Usually on Sound Decisions, I talk about one particular song and really go in depth with it. But you have a really neat series of themes and variations, or I would almost even call them variations and variations. You know, it has a specific, each of them has a specific theme, but they're all just their own unique character. And it's something that I'm such a fan of, the theme and variation, or the same thing, but done with little, like, slightly different ways.
Right.
And I really like the way you did this. In this one, you make it so each one of those is up a half step from the previous one.
That's right.
And you don't go all the way chromatically, but you get a good chunk of the way. We get most of the way through there.
We get over halfway there.
Right. So I'm curious. I mean, just kind of start out. Were you intending on getting all the way at any point?
At some point, we thought that I guess that would round out the full cycle with It Just Do, It Just Don't going the whole way through the scale. At some point, it got to be a stretch to come up with new and creative ways to make each attempt sound original, different, and worthy of recording. It just got to be to the point where when we were on the last one, we knew we were done. And we had planned that we would do 7, 8 to start with. And then by the time we had done 8, we had done enough.
Mm-hmm. You figured you'd gotten, at least with the types of things that you were trying to express, you've gotten about as far as you wanted to get with it.
Right. And it wasn't intended from the beginning to interlace every other track on the album with it. TJ came up with the idea that why don't we do it this way? And yet, actually, for me, that seemed a little predictable for even my brother or myself to do it that way. I would have rather seen a small EP release where they just run straight next to each other. But I went with my brother's idea on that, and, you know, looking at the whole album, it just seemed to fit what we wanted to do with the album. It seemed a way that we could separate some of the longer pieces, and it also seemed to kind of harken back a little bit to cinematic deliveries of songs and how even other songs that aren't in the song cycle, they are often cinematic. So there we go. So then we ended up with, you know, 8 or 9. I should actually look.
Are I'll count it right now. I will count as we speak. I did not do my homework here. So let's see. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
And there's 9.
It goes from G to E flat.
Exactly. And just like you said, you pick up on the previous track's ending key.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you're already way displaced by the time you get to them, if you're listening to an album from start to finish, which is sometimes rare now, but when you are going that way, you don't actually necessarily remember where you just were from, but there's something that's familiar when you get to one of these interludes.
Mm-hmm. Right. You bring up actually an interesting point with that. Not only is each one a half step from the other, but the second half, or I should say the last portion of each of these pieces is in the next key. It's up the half step already. So it's kind of leading you to where that is. Why don't we get started and actually play one of these? So this one is the first one, and it is in the key of G.
This is It Just Do, It Just Don't.
Say what you want, believe what you will.
So that was the G variation, as I said, and I'm going to mention this at the end. You do actually have a, not only all these things can be downloaded, but there's this really great booklet that you can download, or not download, that you can purchase with all the different art and with the lyrics in it and a list of the different people who are playing the different tracks. So that's something you can get for yourself. So the instrumentation with that is banjo, mandolin, radio, cymbal, and bass. And I had an earlier mistake where I thought it said crystal, and I was going to ask you what the crystal was, but apparently I just can't read.
There are no crystals on
that. No crystals. Oh, you know, I thought the crystal was, maybe it was there, you have that kind of those phone sounds that are kind of in there.
Right. Yeah. Came from my dad's old transistor radio.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So this thing had been hanging in our basement all growing up, and I had just taken pictures of it for photo projects, stared at it forever. It could pick up bandwidths with police radio. You know, there's like 7 bandwidths on there. Bandwidths I don't even know or remember.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad gave it to me one day because he was cleaning out the basement. And so I'm sitting there listening to that track as I'm editing it. And I just decided to plug it in and just start rolling through all the different channels pretty slowly. And I didn't go very long before I hit the record button and just captured whatever I did. For the most part, I didn't kind of pick and choose what I liked the best, but I did do it for about 25 minutes.
Okay.
So I did pare it down.
Got it. There's some interesting things in there. I pulled out a couple of the more audible lyrics, the more audible words that are there. It starts out with, say what you want, believe what you will. And he starts to say something else and immediately gets cut off by the bass and the banjo.
Yes.
Is there anything you were trying to express with that particularly, or was it really just the sound quality of the voice, or a little bit of both?
I would say that, and this kind of holds true across the board, that lyrics are kind of secondary to the instrumentation and the musical idea that we do. It doesn't always hold true across the board. My brother puts a lot of effort into lyrics. He writes all the lyrics. I was telling Dan earlier that I do song titles, and I seem to be able to stop right there. I don't go much further with lyrics. But in the case of having sound bites like that, they're generally trying to create an atmosphere within each one. When I have a piece that says something, like they said, what was the line once again?
Say what you want, believe what you will.
It was such an immediately clear thing that you could hang on to. And it was from a preacher, because he's later in the end of the chorus talking about when you die, all these goods and things that we collect, these material goods, will all go to somebody else.
Yes, that is another one. Tonight you're going to die and everything you've ordered will go to something else. Something like that.
Something like that, yeah. And, you know, it's pretty powerful in the middle of the song to hear, tonight you're going to die. That's actually what the minister or the preacher was saying. So that was pretty bold. But every other kind of soundbite was a little bit more, and not to be too heady in this, but it was a little cagey. I was running across, finding what happens. It was great to come across some New York traffic, because that brings in my brother. Then we have clips of the Phillies in there. There's like I didn't use a piece that said 94 YSP, but that's in there with the Phillies. And then you have a clip of quick clip of Led Zeppelin.
And it ends with, you want to forget about your day. You want a song that makes you think about, and then it.
And then it ends. Exactly. Just one of those things, just like how we started. But when that actually was opening up to this full interpretation of what song they could possibly be talking about, it could only be our song. So that kind of spoke for itself. Giving secrets away that may have been earlier, I may have shuffled that because it just did what it needed to do for me.
Mm-hmm. It's the only one, except for, I think, the very last one that has any words in it. The very last one has some words, too. But we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about the music itself. It's a relatively simple progression, although each one seems to start out both in G in major key and the minor key. Like, there's the chords being played in the major key often, while the solo instrument, in this case it's the banjo, plays it in the minor key. That juxtaposition between the two of them, right, that made me think of the title, It Just Do, It Just Don't.
Right. That was an interesting collaboration. That was actually almost a definitive collaboration in a way with TJ. He, at the time when we started recording this particular song cycle, TJ was taking some lessons casually from a gypsy style guitar player out of Brooklyn, where he lives. And he would just be playing these songs in between recording, and it was pretty much the root chords that are going on. And he would play these very gypsy styled. And it was something that I think him and his teacher would vamp on together back and forth. So I had come out with almost a carnival-esque melody line in the banjo in the last song. But we just started to play those over top of each other. TJ would always end the chord structures by moving up just the half step. And we just constantly couldn't stop laughing about how you could almost perpetually play this structure over and over again. It was an interesting collaboration where you have this melody line and this chord progression that did not come from the same place at all. And it created a very weird relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Not symbolic of my brother and I per se, but interesting in the way that two total ideas seem to like give birth to 9 variations.
Yeah. It is interesting. Each time it's not exactly the same melody, at least in the very beginning.
Right.
There's this touchstones at each one. At the beginning, it's usually a little bit more improvised, it seems. And then it kind of eventually moves into a more specific melody. And then it goes over to the 4 chord. In this case, it's C minor, and it has that kind of nice descending.
Right.
And then all hell breaks loose, usually at that point in the variation.
Moving from 4-4 to 3-8.
Yes. So it comes into a dun 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 dun.
Little waltzian.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And it goes over to, usually it goes down to the 7th. So it, in this one, actually, it's kind of the exception. It stays on the G. But in most of them, they go down to, in this case, it would go to the F, then to the B flat, then to the E flat. So kind of moving through the, kind of resolving each of these different things before going back down to the D. Now, if my music theory training serves me correctly, when you have that that E-flat chord resolving to the D chord, I believe that is called either an Italian or German 6 chord. So you have that progression once again. It'd be something like... But that's where you decide to take it up the half step.
Yes.
At that point, immediately moving it over to the next one. And then it vamps on that up the half step for a little bit, just kind of to give a flavor, maybe pick up some of the original improvisation from it. And yeah, so that's a neat little progression right there. It's relatively simple, but it's funny when you mentioned the carnival-esque style to it. There's especially a lot of these, I think I even wrote this in my notes, that there's a gypsy feel to it too. So that makes a lot of sense with the guitar that TJ was studying.
And I think it comes even a little bit more innately than working with Stefan Remble. That was TJ's guitar teacher for a while. In the sense that TJ and I, being brothers, are part of our family bloodline is from Eastern Europe. And so we like to fictitiously believe that a little bit of our artistic direction, our music ability, touches down onto gypsy style performance and folk-based music delivery. The whole part of the idea of the Facebreaker, as far as how I approached asking people to play on it, was to, in my mind, I created a dinner table and I brought ideas to the table. And in my mind, every time we recorded, whether it was in a room like this or in my room or Sam Witchin's living room, it was always at a table that I was thinking in my mind, maybe along production levels, that we are recording together in group, almost dining atmospheres.
Well, speaking of, you mentioned someone, Samantha Witchin. This next one, the A-flat variation, actually features her on piano, and it says keys. I'm imagining you mean keyboard.
She played keyboard, and we hooked up a little harpsichord to that.
Okay, I was thinking maybe she was playing her actual keys. And then you have Felicia Lockett on the bass clarinet, and you are playing walking shoes, pencil, percussion, and samples. Let's take a listen to this before we go any further. My favorite thing about this one, it took me about two or three listens to really get it. You use the pencil as percussion.
I did.
Which is fantastic. I mean, it brings back such a memory of writing with, you know, a wooden pencil, which is something I almost never do anymore. And and it's when it's on the paper and you're actually scribbling like that, the whole last part, once it moves over to the next key, the full percussion, if you will, is the pencil.
Yes.
Where'd that come from?
It came from, I think I was rushing home one day because I had an idea. And it was not this idea, but I loved the idea that just making that effort to get home, that's kind of what this song is a little homage to, mm-hmm. in my mind. And so I always wanted to do something with bass clarinet because I just love that sound. It's kind of one of the instruments I wish I could play. It's just a beautiful sound to me. And Sam, I had gotten their part already. I didn't know how to add my element or TJ's presence. We always wanted to keep that structure. Generally speaking, there are three parts that make these songs. Sometimes we do all of them. Sometimes we do very little. Later on, we'll hear one where I just played pitched water glasses. But in this case, I didn't know what to add. It kind of had the flavor from the beginning. And I thought, I'm just going to cinematically, audibly try to create something that happened within the past week.
Nice.
So I recorded every part of it. The writing part of that, I'm strongest on percussion, period. And especially with found objects, I love that. I love the unpredictability that you might get from certain sounds that you didn't know would give you certain sounds, or just memories, like you said. I often remember one time typing a paper in college late at night and just the rhythm of writing the same word that we were working on, whatever it was. Or maybe it's the password when you log into things, you type it with a certain rhythm. The pencil mark was the same way.
Right.
And then I knew the tempo and let's start writing and kind of keep to it, but have it still feel like we're writing.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually also a marker in there.
Wait a minute. That's not on the list.
All wow. sorts of secrets.
We're learning.
There is a marker in there too that plays a little steadier of a rhythm. But the pencil is trying to be step away to keep the element of actually writing its own sound and path.
That's great. The whole thing kind of slows into this dreamlike, nightmarish section in the more frenetic part of it.
Right.
I should say, you know, I break these down into three different sections, maybe four. You know, there's the little intro, then it changes to the four chord, then we have the frenetic part, and then we have the new key.
Right.
So in that third part, the frenetic part, the whole thing rather than getting frenetic, which would be a really fast down, because it's already kind of frenetic.
Right.
It gets this drug-induced stupor. I like that.
We moved quick on this one from the beginning. I don't know what it was. I think it was Sam's approach to how she wanted to roll the chords.
Mm-hmm.
I just drew on the fact she loves rags. Mm-hmm. And so when she was rolling these chords, we got to keep that one quick. And I thought the best juxtaposition, so that this whole song just didn't rush through or you didn't get an appreciation for the change in the frenetic, the 3-8 section, was to slow it down. In that area, I add some distortion to the bass clarinet. I think there's a little bit more of a reverb that comes on in that area. Yeah, and it enters this kind of dreamlike area. The character, the walker, comes home. There's a door that shuts. Some locks come down. And walking over to the table, pull out the chair, get started with the idea.
Very cool. Well, let's move on to the next variation. This one is, let's play it first. In A, this has just you and TJ, both of you are playing keyboards and he's playing guitar. So that's that kind of gypsy-ish sound you were talking about before.
Right. And this one was actually, might have been the first one we recorded. It was based off of the progression that TJ had been playing to begin with, to kind of start the inspiration for this. But as we learned our instruments better, as we learned what instruments we wanted to use and kind of found favorable ranges, which... You know, me being a little unlearned, I didn't realize that for a long time. This one ends up being third.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, yeah, it's one of the more direct approaches on this song cycle.
Definitely. There is one little interesting thing. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things, but the whole thing starts in that, once again, is it an A major, A minor? So it's kind of the, if I were to do this on the toy piano once again, our instrument of the evening. Between these two. And then you have these little pizzicato strings samples that are in there. But interestingly, they play a C arpeggio with not an A or an A minor arpeggio. So for instance, so let's say we're in the A minor side of things, because by the time they start to play, it's more established in A minor.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this. You have kind of one of those things where it's actually playing... not quite the same chord, but it works really nicely and it has a little bit of tension with it.
I hear it. It's just playing with music.
Yes, that's great.
It's an appreciation for Carl Stalling in this one and just, you know, all that Warner Brothers music.
I don't know Carl Stalling.
He was the conductor that wrote the music for Warner Brothers.
Okay, so that makes sense.
So it has that touch of perfectedness that a cartoon will deliver.
Yeah.
With the soundtrack.
It's always amazing that those guys actually recorded.
I know. Actually played it. I have recordings of him live and then he'll stop recording and be like, no, that's where they're going to be coming down the pole. And just to think about these guys actually just live performing these things is just amazing.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, not much more to say about that one, but it's the more straightforward of them. And it's got mostly that kind of vibe sound, guitar, and the pizzicato strings. So we'll move on to the B flat variation.
Oh, no, 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 no,
Yeah, so that's the B flat variation. So you've got those glasses kind of as your percussion, sort of a tonal anchor, but more with the organ sound that you have.
Right.
And then the melody this time is played by, as I wrote on my my notes, the murmur and the nurmur. So
that's well put.
You are in this one. You are playing the glasses, and you're listed in vocals. And TJ's also doing vocals and the keys for it.
Yes.
So I guess who was doing the nurmur and the murmurs, and who was doing this kind of growl in the first section of it, and then this kind of wail or in the second section.
TJ is doing the nurmur.
He's so lucky. That's the fun part. I'm sorry, Dutch. That's the part everybody wants to do.
Yeah, that was T from the get-go. I'm in the background. I don't know where this really came from. We did this on one take each. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't even know if I listened to what he did. I'm pretty sure I didn't listen to what he did, because when you get to the end of the song, we kind of switch roles. And I think we just both naturally went that way as the song changed and was just working with your brother. That's going to happen. But I'm in the background. I just made, it's probably something, you know, psychologically deep inside, but I envisioned not wanting to cross the street because maybe an old girlfriend or a lover was across the street. And last time you crossed the street, things didn't work out so well. And I just, you know, stream of consciousness, having fun with it. This is our weirdo track. And so we have fun with it. Those glasses are atonal. I thought I was flicking them, and there were a bunch of different glassware, mostly like canning jars or small cups. And I was flicking them when we were recording that. And I thought I could try to fix a few off beats, but it didn't go with the feeling of this track. Just the mm-hmm. best take I could do was probably the best it needed to be.
So I'm curious. I think after the frenetic section, when the keys change, did the glasses change key also?
Same glasses. I play a different beat.
Okay. So maybe you were just playing different ones at the different time.
It definitely could have been that.
Okay. Because I was like, did they actually retune these? Like pour a little bit out of each of them to make it a little bit. Oh, wait. No, you pour a little bit more in each of them to make it a little higher, right?
Make it a little higher. Yeah. Pour more in. But yeah, you're right. I probably had maybe wine glasses over on the, I'm imagining the left side. I remember we did this in TJ's kitchen. It was actually the first set of glasses are on a dish towel. But you're right. It does drop to almost like a lower sound somewhere in the middle of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we changed the rhythm.
That's great. It's really entertaining. I was very entertained by that track. I was entertained by them all, but that one, you just kind of laugh at. It's
and
great.
Then that's me wailing at the end, and then TJ takes on the like the more murmuring sound, right, as it trails out, ending with an amen.
Yeah. Oh, there is an. I didn't hear the amen.
The amen is at the very end with this somewhat churchy organ.
Right. That makes sense.
Holding the note.
Cool. Well, let's move on to the B variation. Let's take a look at the B variation, which is the longest of the variations.
Thank you.
All right, so that one is definitely, I would say it's the most different, at least from any of the ones that have come before it. You have the electric guitars. Both you and TJ are listed on guitar on this one. You're playing the harmonica and he's playing some keyboard. So the electric guitar kind of opens up and it sounds almost like a kind of a ballad of some sort. The harmonica comes in and gives it that really blues feel. And for me, it took a little while to realize that the harmonica was approaching the melody within there in the way that a harmonica can. Maybe you want to talk about that, just the idea of what the harmonica can and can't do.
There are three harmonicas used on that piece.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess so, for each time the key changes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, especially as we stepped up. And so part of a method I use to create, even though I break this rule constantly, is to use things that are available to me. I have three harmonicas. I was willing to go buy another one to make this work right. But in this case, when we were in B here, I think I start off with a harmonica in D. As I found the sections, as we move up and towards the end and as we start, there was definitely an eerie relationship between the notes and the key that I was playing in. But it was enough to just let it live this way.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready to go. I had researched which harmonicas. I wasn't using a chromatic harmonica, so I was kind of limited to the, I think there's two scales on just a traditional blues harp is what they were.
You change the harmonics a little bit in this one also, especially when you get to the quote-unquote frenetic section, which is not quite nearly as...
Are you quoting yourself?
I am quoting myself. It is not nearly as frenetic for that one. So rather than going... Normally it goes down, so if this were the B variation, so actually it starts out where it should. It starts out by going down to the 7, which is the A chord there, or the flat 7, which is the A chord. Then it just does this descending progression. It goes from the A to a G, and then to kind of this F sharp piece before rocketing up to C.
Uh-huh.
And then it hangs out in C for a while there, although it ends on kind of that E, I guess is that an open E? I'm pretty sure it's an open E to have that kind of extended feel to it.
Right.
Which is the third note of C. I don't know if I was going way too far with this one, but I interpreted that as part of the C chord. It's like, okay, we're in C, but we'll land on this E, you know? A nice major third inside there, even though you're not feeling very major.
I like that you found that. I think we felt it out and you found it out.
Excellent. Yeah, I love the way the harmonica, you can't play all the same notes. You do bend a couple of them inside there,
right.
But most of them, you are playing an approximation of the theme with the notes that are given. And I also very much appreciate the you play with what you're given. So I've got this, you know, crappy cymbal in the corner. That's going to be the percussion for it. And that's what I work with. I could spend 3 hours researching the different samples or purchasing one of my own.
Right.
But I'm going to just get, you know, what I have.
One other note on that one, though. I think that song came about as it is with all of the guitars. There are 4 guitar lines in that piece. TJ and I approached a lot of the Face Raker songs on this recording with monitoring how much electric guitar would be used. You know, historically, TJ and I have been playing electric guitar for a while. And we were totally fine with not playing electric guitars. It was felt great. I wrote most of these songs on a classical guitar, and they were meant for that. But this is what happens when you don't plug in for a long time. So we have 4. We turned the amps up loud, creating almost like this Lynchian swirl of panic.
I can see that. It's definitely, there's an intensity to it, definitely. The C variation. We're going to take a look next at the C variation, or as I like to call it, the Ocean Voyage.
Thank you.
right. So yes, that was the Ocean Voyage one. Not only because Dutch played the floor creaks in this one, which I totally heard as, you know, like the ship creaking.
Sure.
But TJ played the harmonium, the saw, and keyboards. And Varuni Tiruchelvam, is that close?
It's close.
Okay.
I don't even think I can say that.
I'm so sorry, Varuni. Yes. Played the cello on that one, the heavily affected cello. Sounds like, in addition to the pretty heavy reverb on there, there's either like a chorus or a phaser effect on there.
There is a little bit. I think there's almost like a little bit of a light phaser.
Mm-hmm. And the harmonium, I'm looking at this. You say it's the harmonium one here. That's a real harmonium?
Real harmonium.
Maybe I'm misinterpreting the main. No, that's the harmonium?
That is the harmonium.
That is a fantastic sounding harmonium.
From eBay.
Oh, man.
I know. It's a gem. TJ found that one.
Oh, my God. As I was listening to it, I'm like, that's got to be a sample. That sounds so so perfect. It's too perfect.
I know. It's great. And it even has taped bellows. And, you know, it didn't need a lot of repair, but we didn't even get it repaired. Just taped it well, and it's treated us well.
The harmonium line also reminds me of a slower version of that kind of gypsy line in the piano and the guitar. It reminds me of what Samantha was playing in the second variation, and I guess TJ was playing in the, is it the third variation?
Third one,
yeah, the third one. It's like dun 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 or bum dun 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 dun.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun. It's still, it's got that same kind of a feel to it.
It is very seafaring.
Yes. I just want to get in a hammock. And whenever I think of voyages on the ocean, I think of hammocks because, you know, my back hurts a lot. And then I'm afraid that, you know, what if I slept in that hammock every night and it really hurt? That's probably why, among the other reasons why I'm not a sailor. So, and then you got the saw. TJ's playing the saw on that.
Yeah, TJ has a saw, singing saw.
That's not an easy instrument to play.
No, it's not.
So it's definitely not one of the ones you picked up on eBay.
I think that one is new.
Yes.
It's, or
it's something he studied is what I mean.
Right. Studied as in he has fun with it and plays it. Sure. This song definitely is seafaring. One thing that, since I played floor creaks, one thing I felt to have a little bit of right in this song is on the production side. And one thing that was particularly interesting and super subtle, and nobody would know this but me until today, is that the reverb in the beginning and in the end of the song, it's only there that it's real heavy. In the middle, it kind of has like a normal large space reverb. But when I lived in Vermont and in the hills, there was a military base nearby, and I used to work outside a lot. And every now and then, maybe like a 50 caliber machine gun would burst over at the military base, and you would hear 5 seconds of this artillery echo through all the valleys and bounce through the valleys down the mountains until it echoed away, just like you get on the very end of that track, and you get it in the very beginning before the melody kind of officially kicks in.
It is kind of a long hold at the end, and it's on the cello holding that last part, right?
Yeah.
The cello is the artillery round in this case.
It is, in this case. Yeah.
Excellent.
So yeah, we held out that one at the end. I was pretty insistent as we were mastering this or in the final mix that I wanted to have a long hold just for that little memory.
Very cool. We set sail from there into the D-flat variation. So let's take a listen to that one. All right, so that was the D-flat variation. That had you playing glass harp and samples. Samantha Witchin once again playing, this time she's playing harp. And then someone, Tuba Dan Noshaney, playing tuba. I promise you, I don't just do this podcast so I can show off the things that I've played in. But this was fun to do this variation. This one really feels dark.
It is dark.
I mean, you could say that tuba is kind of a dark instrument, but that's not necessarily true. It's sometimes a little bit brighter. And same with harp. You can think of harp as very light. But the way that it was mixed, or maybe the EQ was on it, everything seems a little bit muted, a little bit thicker.
Part of that for you was for just straight poor recording at the time. It was what I could get the best sound. I actually had some rattling going on with you, and I worked with what I could. Yours definitely has a little bit of a muted sound to it.
Sorry.
Sam, no, that was my small Sony microphone. For better or worse, for some reason at the time of recording, that was the best thing that we used. I have a very nice Rode microphone, but I remember testing it and thinking that this small Sony that runs off of an 1/8-inch adapter would be the best way to go for you. Regardless, that's what kind of crafted your sound. Sam's sound was an attempt to get the best harp sound I could. But between all of that and adding, you know, this kind of the ethereal glass sound, it just definitely adds to the ambience level.
Oh, absolutely.
Here. It definitely creates a mood that is along that dark avenue.
And is it gongs or
there's one or two gong hits.
Okay.
Yeah. I toyed back and forth keeping that in. It's such a small thing. I thought it could make it cheesy, but in the end I just could not resist a hit, mm-hmm. especially in the beginning. I do think there's one in the end too, but especially mm-hmm. in the beginning.
And then there's that during the interlude this time, kind of various inarticulate talking and some laughter kind of breaks up that mood a little bit, especially because it gets a little jolly at that point.
Yeah.
And do you want to talk about that scream that happens in there?
So as a simple variation on the approach, I decided that we would take the pace of this song, start slower, move faster, slowly increasing as we go along. The kind of highest, quickest common denominator, if you will, was the fastest that you on tuba could play that melody line. And Sam, it was a little maybe easier for you to comp chords quicker. You had to match how fast Dan could play it. And, you know, Dan, you had played many takes. Some of them I thought were great, but you could tell that you didn't hit the note the way you wanted. And you banged out a great version, but Sam could not stay with you. And it was just this awesome bolt of friendly frustration. And how could I not use that? Even at the time, I think we laughed after that. It kind of was, you know, it had to be in there.
When we were just listening to it right now, you said, I laugh every time I hear that. And I also, I crack up every time I hear that. It's definitely selfish, but it's one of my favorite parts of the whole thing. From there, we move to the D variation.
Thank you.
So that was the D variation. This one has you playing pedal steel and some of the samples, TJ doing the keys, and then you have Danny Gauker on the cornet. This one has kind of a Hawaiian Aleutian Island meets Miles Davis meets dubstep kind of thing going on with it. Mm-hmm. Keeps jumping back and forth between the different styles. I would say the cornet has a pretty consistent, that harmon mute sound throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But the drums keep going back and forth between these kind of sloppy, very real sounding drums. Although I imagine those are just keyboard drums.
These ones are samples. Yeah.
Yes. But they sound pretty real. And then maybe it's because it's juxtaposed with the electronic beats
right.
that are going along, cutting in and out a little bit. Then finally, when you get to the interlude and right past the interlude, it ends with that kind of, I don't know. I said dubstep before. I'm not as up on this. Do you want to say electronica? Do you want to say house music? Do you have a...
I'm not super knowledgeable about all the different variations of electronic music. We'll just call it electronica.
Yeah, let's do it electronica. We'll get in the least amount of trouble with that. When I listen to this the second time, the only real clue that you have that it's going to go into electronica, because it's pretty real sounding, especially with the drums the way they are, is the bass. The bass is definitely one of those flat toned, like sine wave
basses,
yeah. Which is really cool because you don't, and if you're not listening for it, you hear sloppy drums, you hear the pedal steel, and you hear this blues cornet. When you hear a bass, you're thinking, oh, it's just going to be, you know, a string bass kind of a sound, uh-huh. or an electric bass. But it, when I listen to it the second time, I'm like, oh, that's kind of the clue. And it moves back and forth between those different sections. So I guess it just trying to play around with some different styles in this one.
Playing with different styles, juxtaposing a lot. Something we could talk about too is just the word facebreaker and kind of something that TJ and I use to draw just general inspiration on is just juxtaposition. Oftentimes more comical, not that our music is always comical, but loving to be in a point where you're laughing hysterically to the point where it starts hurting. Thinking about just like Beatlemania, those girls just loving the Beatles so much that they just freaked themselves out. They freak me out looking at the pictures. That kind of juxtaposition is, we try to use that all over the place. And in this song, I can be a little more specific here. I was aiming for just this barroom, country barroom. You got the pedal steel, the slow, kind of lazily rolling snare drum in some barroom stomp. And you can even hear when I started with my electronic hi-hat playing at a different pace than where we start from. I kind of counted off in a faster rhythm as if like, oh, okay, we're sitting in and we're playing at this pace. Okay. We kind of settle into a slower pace and then we kind of juxtapose just with some electronica. Just where did that come from? You know, that's almost like, being that my wife is from Montana and we may have a drink in the local cafe or bar, maybe a car comes by down the main strip. You know, there's one main road in town and maybe it's a just younger generation, the kids, and it's just pumping some music and it's just not the music that historically and regionally plays in that area. Kind of just wanted to play with that idea.
So each of these does really feel like it has, the more I'm hearing you talk about them, it sounds like each one does have a story. Do you feel like that's true or do you feel like some of them are a little bit more abstract?
None of them are too abstract. The variation with the electric guitars, we turned our amps loud. We had a big amp. We turned that one loud and we just let it be what it was. And
that's got plenty of character.
It's got a lot of character. It's got this weird, I mean, I could make up a narrative about some kind of transient like feeling to it moving somewhere. But in this case, yeah, these all have some kind of first person fictional story. Somewhere I've been, something I'm remembering. Mm-hmm. And they're all cinematic in that way. Being a photographer, working with visuals and loving film, these are kind of like audio vignettes. And never were purposely part of the song cycle, but always added every single time to like the thematic approach on them.
Let's just move on to the last one. The last variation is the E flat variation.
book that you made.
So that takes us to the end of the It Just Do, It Just Don'ts, but that was the E-flat variation. That has you playing baritone guitar, percussion, and you are the whistle soloist. And TJ is playing guitar, keyboards, glockenspiel, vocals, and percussion. Although, I was just thinking about this. He's doing the vocals. There is that. There, this is the other one, the last one, where there's actually some words in there. But the very last thing, very last words, let's jump to that real fast, is I don't know why. And he's not singing that. Is that correct?
That is him.
Wow.
Playing with pitch octave and trying to sing as falsetto as he could. And I think he used a pitch octave to drop himself down, you know, right before then.
Right.
The face breaker stirring up all the muck that you make.
Got it. In twos and threes and fours.
In twos and threes and fours.
So that's
why? I don't know why.
You don't know
why? That's what he was singing. And it seemed to just wrap up everything about it. This was our final one.
So the I don't know why. See, I was interpreting that as like a separate part from the previous part, but you're saying it's like stirring up all the muck.
He says stirring up all the muck that you make.
And then I don't know why. That's really clever. That's pretty funny. So this one definitely has more of a, I would call it a Western feel to it.
I had just gotten the baritone guitar after a few years of wanting one. So I was leaning more surfy.
Oh, okay.
We've got some clava blocks banging and playing with a little different reverb here, but just really traditional surf style reverb and whistling.
The melody in the B section where it goes to the four chord is a little bit different in this one in the previous one. So it falls. I feel like it's because when it goes to the four chord, it is very much a definitively. So this is the E flat variation. That would be an A flat chord. It's very much an A flat minor chord there. Whereas the other ones, it's a little bit more leeway as to exactly where it could be.
That's true. Yeah.
And so for that reason, the whistle has to fall a little bit more in those segments for it.
The whistle was hard to do.
I believe you. it sounds like you got pretty low.
Yeah, I tried to find the place where I could be the lowest and it actually hurt recording, like holding. I didn't know this, but I'm sure woodwinds players have this for a long time, but just like shaping your mouth, I felt like I was a Dr. Seuss character, like kind of draw that sad shape point down. And yeah, finding the lowest note was hard to do. It's actually maybe only two takes to do the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's not true. I did several takes. This is only pieced together of two different takes.
Oh, okay.
Which is impressive for me. But yeah, very low whistle. And I think the highs were not a problem to hit.
Right. They seem a little bit more within range.
Range of a whistle.
Yeah. Of I guess whistles are not gendered. Like women can't whistle higher than. I should have researched this. See, now here I am making myself look like an idiot.
Oh man, the whistling board might come after you.
That's right. The whistling. I'm imagining that's actually like a board, that like an anthropomorphic board.
It'll just be out front tomorrow morning.
You're like, no, the whistling board's just like Dutch said it would be.
Trying to put that one together was a little different with TJ and I, only because we were starting to run out of time of finishing this. TJ had a separate direction than I did. I was going to almost stick with this one being just a total surf variation. It almost was a little boring to only do that, but I thought it could be just clear. We had some instruments that we could use that we haven't used yet, and it would be just kind of end it. TJ was on a totally different path. He wanted to make up different verses, and I thought that strayed a little bit from the structure we were working in. We ultimately cut almost like, as TJ called it, a mashup. We cut two ideas together. I blended it with a sample of a bagpipe, and something in that transition that it's in the 3/8 section, the phonetic section, it switches over to TJ's idea essentially, and then just one more swipe of the baritone and a bend, and that's the last you'll hear from me at the very end. So two different approaches on that last one. they met and they worked, and that was it.
So yeah, that takes us to the end of those different variations, and those are, as I said in the beginning, those are interspersed with different songs, some of them with lyrics, some of them without, one of them with a single lyric, which is just "Hey." I won't even say which one it was. You'll have to go check it out on your own. But it's really a fantastic album, and all of the pieces are amazing. And it's just some really, really cool stuff in it. I really like the sounds that you're getting out of that, and it was neat hearing your ideas of the different vignettes that were in there, as well as the approaches that were coming from it.
It was great. I don't know. I'm sure we could probably come up with more if we had continued, but it had run its course. It had stated everything we wanted to do. We kind of tried to also relatively stay within the realm of all instruments that were used on the album. You know, kind of to date, the Facebreaker has been a recording project. It's had a few opportunities here and there to work with film, but for the most part, it's a recording project. It's something that we both love to do. I love to do. But I still thought that if we are going to perform any of this, we needed to relatively stay within the realm of what we could offer. That would be a ridiculous setup to bring all these sorts of things. But, you know, I wanted to round out and make sure that the cornet had a part in the second to last variation. And, you know, we get the pedal steel in there that's prominent in other tracks. So everybody kind of had a part. And on that last track, where we bring in vocals, we realized we had an unspoken version. I think the third track, the third Do Don't, does have vocals like you heard, but this one was a little bit more specific to try and sing a little bit, even though TJ's playing with the octaves, the octavator or whatever.
That's a great accomplishment. I hope this is not like something I legitimately hope for. But in my mind, I'm like, there are three lost variations out there. And someday they'll see the light of day.
They're going to turn up.
It's going to be like, oh, wait, what's this in this box right here? I don't know why you're keeping them in a box, but there is an E, an F, and an F sharp variation.
They're in cahoots with the whistling board.
That's right. So, Dutch, where can people hear your music?
You can find our music at thefacebreaker.com, our website. And it has a free download of the album. You can enjoy it for free. The book that you were talking about earlier is an accompaniment. Since we wanted to keep overhead low, and we offer this album right now as just as a download. But being TJ and I both being visual people and both working creatively and artists and photographers, we still gravitate and love the tangible. So we decided to offer this book. We made the book all ourselves. We printed it all ourselves. TJ takes full credit, being that he used to work on book layout. And it's got my photographs in it, some historical photographs from our great aunt, including pictures of four people that are bakers from the Huff Family Bakery in North Philadelphia.
I don't know if you can hear. I'm going to do this right now so you can hear me going through it, and because I have one of these awesome things. Which one's the bakers?
Oh, there he is.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, there they are.
So the lower right hand guy is my great great grandfather.
Wow. So you definitely want to pick up the extended booklet so you can see Dutch's great great grandfather.
The great great grandfather.
Wow.
And the books are for sale for $10. You get the download with it, or just enjoy the music.
Right, and there's also an option to pay what you want. And, you know, it's always good to support music and musicians if you like what you're hearing. So, yeah, you can download it for free, but, you know, is it worth $5 to you? If so, give $5, you know? Well, thank you so much for coming today, Dutch. Thank you for not only coming, but you brought this great... normally, I was saying when I do these, I have water on hand for when my throat gets gravelly, but... We're actually drinking some Narwhal Imperial Stout from Sierra Nevada. That's courtesy of Dutch, so if I sound even more gravelly...
That's why. Or if we've rambled for over an hour.
Why are you talking about? This might be why, too. This is the best podcast ever. We'll end with that. So thanks again for coming.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks again for listening to the Sound Decisions Podcast. I'm Dan Noshaney. For more information about this podcast, or all things Dan Noshaney related, you can visit
neonandshy.com.